Mr. Kenley, could you say a few words so I'm sure I can hear you?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. Is that coming through okay?
Very good. Thank you very much. The next case on the court's calendar this morning is A23-1451, Jennifer Liu, petitioner versus Commissioner of Public Safety. Is each of the attorneys familiar with our Zoom format and procedures?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Excellent. Then we'll hear first from counsel for appellant. Each of you should state your name for the record so we have you identified on the audio recording that's made available to the public. You may proceed.
Thank you. The counsel in the court, my name is Rich Kenley. I'm the attorney for the appellant. My client was a passenger in a vehicle. It was stopped by a deputy in Monoman County. The deputy then arrested her husband. And during the arrest, the appellant got out of the vehicle to see what was going on. And this is all captured, fortunately, on the deputy's body camera. But the deputy yells, "Remain in the car, ma'am." And then she got back in the car. She got into the driver's side. And when the deputy had completed the arrest of her husband, he came back up. And we can see on the video that she was sitting with her legs out, facing sideways, on the phone with her sister to come pick her up and give her a ride.
There seemed to be a little bit of a lack of clarity, at least as I was reviewing the record, as to how the door opened, the driver's side door opened in which she entered. It looks like in your brief, your position is the door was left open. And is that clear? Is that a finding the district court made, or is it possible that she opened the driver's side door?
Yeah, and I'm afraid that my brief was incorrect in that, and I'll own up to that. I reviewed it several times this morning just in preparation with my morning coffee, and it certainly appears that the door was closed by her husband as he walked back prior to field sobriety tests, which would indicate that when she walked around, she would have had to open that door to hop up into that seat.
Thank you for that. I hope that.
Yes, Your Honor, and I apologize for that. I corrected it now.
Thank you.
As it were, though, Your Honor, the officer walks up and then tells her that she's in physical control of the vehicle. That's a legal conclusion. Essentially, he put that into her vernacular, and she agreed that, yes, I'm in physical control. I mean, at that point, I think she would have agreed to being the shooter on the grassy knoll in Dallas. She just witnessed her husband be arrested. You can see on the video that she tells her sister, "Sis, I'm going to jail." And she gets down out of the vehicle after telling the deputy that she wasn't driving anywhere.
Counsel, this is Judge Larkin with a question. To be honest, I'm not so focused on her admission that she was in physical control, because I think that's a legal conclusion and it's one we must make de novo. And I'm not going to, you know, treat that as an admission of guilt on her part. What I am wondering, though, is, you know, she clearly was a passenger. I wonder, did she give up her status as a known passenger, and did she take some steps that put her in a position where she could have used the car in a way that would have caused harm to others?
And that we'll go to Starfield. In Starfield, if you're even standing by the vehicle and there's keys and it's running, you're in physical control. But that brings us on to Shane, which brings in the reasonableness factor. And I don't think that exists here. I don't think the officer or the deputy, excuse me, had a reasonable basis to think that she was going to turn or jump in behind the wheel, put it in drive, and lead him on a merry chase through the town of Monoman.
Is that necessary? And I struggle with that in reviewing this case. I mean, does it matter that if the officer believed she had no intent to drive away? Is that the determinative factor? Or is it whether she could have done so? Not whether she intended to do so, but whether she could have done so.
Well, Shane discusses the reasonableness. Got that right here. It has to be, I think it is required. Because otherwise the net gets thrown really wide. The whole point of Shane was where the passenger, somebody sitting in the passenger seat, reached over and somehow bumped the accelerator pedal.
But Shane, the court also said in Shane did not move to the driver's seat touch the steering wheel or put the vehicle in gear. Here, your client moved to the driver's seat. She got out, walked around, opened the door, got in the driver's seat. So this is goes beyond what happened in Shane.
Correct. But what the appellant was trying to, she got out of the vehicle and was trying to get a better view of what was happening with her husband. It was at that point the deputy ordered her to remain in the vehicle. She hopped in the vehicle. She was standing by that side, or we assume she was standing by that side of the vehicle. Yeah, if she'd been standing by the passenger side, I would assume she would have hopped back in there. But when the deputy ordered her to remain in the vehicle, she hopped in, were right there and got in the vehicle and complying with the order. But
you're
what
asking,
she did,
you're making assumptions about where she was. There was an opportunity to develop a record about where she was in relation to the driver's seat and the passenger seat.
Well, there was testimony, and it's in the state's brief, that there were tracks around the front of the vehicle from the passenger door, obviously going around the front of the truck to where to the driver's side door.
But to follow up on Judge Ross's point, in the absence of a transcript, our review is basically limited to whether the findings of fact sustain the conclusions of law. And I see no findings of fact. The only finding I see is number two, that Deputy Nelson directed petitioner to remain in the vehicle. And then you have finding three, that somehow she's now sitting on the driver's side. I don't even think that, with her feet hanging out the side. I don't know that there's any findings of fact that we can review as to how she got into that position. Would you agree with that?
Well, there aren't findings of fact of that. We do have the what we have is the video, which pretty much captured the whole interaction between the appellant and the deputy.
Counsel, I want to go back to the legal standard. As I read Shane, what the court said is, in order for a police officer to have probable cause to believe a known passenger, and she was a known passenger, I believe, is in physical control of a motor vehicle, the officer must have reason to believe that the passenger has, or is about to, take some action that makes the motor vehicle a source of danger to themselves, to others, or to property. And what I'm asking myself is, in this case, didn't the officer have reason to believe that your client took some action that made the motor vehicle a source of danger to themselves, to others, or the property, simply by getting in to the driver's seat while the vehicle was running, keys in the ignition?
I don't believe so.
It seems to me that the person standing next to the running car who can get in and drive away is probably less of a danger than the person who's sitting in the driver's seat of the running car and could drive away.
I believe, Your Honor, under the totality of the circumstances, when he approached the vehicle, you can see that she is not at the control. She's sitting, hanging out, and she's on the phone trying to get a ride home. That shows no intent to get behind the wheel and
but
to
I don't
drive
think
the
case law requires us to look at the person's intent, because that would pretty much be an impossible standard. What the case law asks is the person in a position to make the car a dangerous vehicle? And if a person standing outside of a running vehicle has been found to be in control, why isn't a person who's seated in the front seat in the same position? I think the only way you can reach a different conclusion is to focus on that person's intent. And I'm not aware of any case law that tells us we're supposed to look at the intent of the person. We just look at the circumstances and I guess objectively decide, well, was this person in a position that he or she could make the motor vehicle a source of danger to themselves or others by driving away?
Yeah, I don't believe under the totality of circumstances it was reasonable for the deputy to arrest her and revoke her license.
Okay, that's a different question. Could he, should he? This is different than under the law, was this justified?
Well, I believe that the deputy or any arresting officer should have a reasonable basis to think that the person they're arresting was likely to, or was about to, or was in a position to do so. I mean, we'll take that further back. Sitting in the passenger seat, she could have flipped up the center console and scooched over easier than she could have probably walked around and hopped in if she was going to create a problem or wanted to create a danger to herself or others. She didn't violate anything the officer had told her when she got out of the vehicle, because he had at that point hadn't told her anything, essentially just took her husband, did field sobriety tests on him. She got out, admittedly a mistake on her part. When the officer...
Okay. Let me just, because I know time is limited, let's assume for the sake of argument, we all agree. We don't think she was going to drive away. We think she's probably intoxicated. She hopped up in the seat. She was trying to make arrangements. So we'll assume she had no intent to drive. I don't understand how that conclusion gets around the standard for physical control, which has been stated as follows. A person's in physical control of the vehicle if she has the means to initiate any movement of that vehicle and she is in close proximity to the operating controls of the vehicle. I mean, do you agree that your client had the means to initiate movement of the vehicle and that she was in close proximity to the operating controls of the vehicle?
I can't disagree with you, Your Honor. I mean, the video shows where she was sitting.
So it seems like the only way you get around physical control is if intent, in fact, is an issue. Do you have any case law suggesting that in addition to looking at whether the person has the means to initiate any movement and whether the person is in close proximity to the operating controls, we also look at whether the person intended to drive away? I'm pretty sure there's a case that says you don't look at intent. Maybe the state can offer that, but do you have any case that says you do look at intent?
None that I could find, Your Honor.
Okay.
I guess the crux of my argument, Your Honor, and I grant your point, she was in proximity. She was in proximity in the passenger seat as she was standing outside the truck. She was still in proximity. But there was a reasonableness requirement put in by this court in the Shane case. And I don't believe that it was reasonable for the deputy to believe that she was under the circumstances on what he saw and what was happening that evening. He did not have a reasonable belief that she was going to take control of the vehicle or operate the vehicle or create a danger under the formula put forth by the case.
But as you said earlier, she's in a position to do exactly that. Isn't that the critical piece? She was in the position to drive off in that car, whether she intended to or not.
Well, the way the deputy found her, she couldn't have driven the vehicle. She was literally at a 90-degree angle with her knees and feet hanging out the side of the vehicle. She couldn't operate the vehicle in that position. The door was open, and she was on the phone trying to get a ride from family.
How do you reconcile? I will tell you just candidly, and the state can comment on it as well, because I think it's an equal problem for both sides. I have a hard time reconciling Shane with the case law that indicates that the defendant can be outside the vehicle and still be in control of the vehicle, or potentially in control of the vehicle, physical possession, physical control of the vehicle. As I read Shane, the court says, well, look, there's no evidence. I'll just quote from the case. No evidence and the officers who stopped the Bronco did not allege that Shane put himself in a position to move the Bronco or that caused the Bronco to move. But there you've got a passenger who reaches over and depresses the accelerator so that the engine revs up. And the court says, well, you know, the defendant didn't put the car into gear. It seems like you're a whole lot more in physical control of a car when you're in the passenger seat revving up the engine than when you're outside the vehicle with the door closed. I'm not sure. Maybe can you reconcile Shane with the other case law?
Without
including intent as a feature.
Well, I have to agree with you, Your Honor. The if you're standing outside and the car is running, you're correct that the passenger touching an actual control, revving the engine is running the controls of the vehicle. The appellant wasn't sitting facing the controls. She had no means from where the officer discovered her, and then clearly shown on her body camera, she didn't have the means at that time. She certainly wasn't going to spin in front of the officer and try to make a getaway. The officer knew or should have known, I believe, that she had no, I don't want to go on the intent road, but that she wasn't trying to assert, did not assert physical control over the vehicle from her actual conduct. Her conduct of sitting sideways showed she couldn't touch the vehicle. She wasn't trying to touch the vehicle. She had just gotten in the vehicle as directed by the officer. Should she have gotten in the passenger seat, walked around the front? Absolutely. We wouldn't be here today with this. But I don't believe the officer, I'm almost out of time, I don't think the officer made a reasonable decision, and he revoked her license, and that's going to scar her driving record for the rest of her days. And I don't believe the reasonable basis required, that should be required, existed. And thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll now hear from counsel for the state. Would you state your name for the record before beginning?
May it please the court. My name is Corey Marsalek. I represent the respondent, Commissioner of Public Safety, asking this court to affirm the district court's order sustaining the revocation of appellant's driver's license because the district court correctly concluded that appellant was in physical control of the vehicle. I'll begin with Judge Larkin's question. Starfield itself says that intent to operate is not an element of physical control. So that, you know, I believe Your Honor is correct that, you know, she had relinquished her passenger status by getting into the driver's seat of the vehicle, just as in Shane, where the Supreme Court acknowledged that, you know, there must be a reason, the person must have or is about to take some action to make the motor vehicle a source of danger to themselves or others. And then it's cited as an example of actions that an individual could take, including moving to the driver's seat. And that is exactly what appellant did here. She was in the driver's seat with the keys in the ignition and the vehicle running. That under the overall situation.
Though there's a little difference with Shane. I mean, the court there said that the defendant didn't move to the driver's seat because the defendant was in a position in the passenger seat. Here, Miss Liu leaves the car and the officer says, remain in the vehicle. And then she sits down with her feet outside the car. Is there any dispute about that fact, that her feet are outside the car?
There is no dispute about the fact that her feet were outside the car while she was sitting in the driver's seat.
I mean, in order to move a car, in order to put a car into a dangerous condition, in order to make it dangerous, you have to have access to the gear. You have to access the gear. You have to access the accelerator, the gas pedal, and the steering wheel. So in Shane, you have access to the gas pedal, but no apparent access or no actual reaching over to the steering wheel, and no getting into the seat, the driver's seat. But you actually had a use of one of those three elements to move the vehicle. Here, you don't have her feet are outside the car. I think we all can say with common knowledge that you can't put a car into gear unless your feet are inside the car or something is depressing the brake pedal before the car will be moved into any gear so the car can be moved. She wasn't turned towards the steering wheel and her foot wasn't on the accelerator. And I know intent isn't a factor, but I mean, she's literally on the phone to get a ride. There's no dispute, I don't think, about that she clearly was planning on doing something other than driving the car. And I look at the conclusion of the Supreme Court in Shane. We conclude, based on what the two police officers observed, that the officers had no reason to believe that Shane had or was about to take some action that would make the Bronco a source of danger. And help me to understand why Shane is an exercise more in control than in this case.
I think in Shane, the person was a known passenger seated in the passenger seat. And I think the fact that the appellant moved over to the driver's seat, which is a fact that Shane acknowledged could put a person, relinquish a passenger status, is a distinguishing fact that distinguishes this case from Shane.
No, that's fair enough. But the reason you're concerned about someone moving to the driver's seat is because they have access to the three components, the gear shifter, the gas pedal, and the steering wheel. And in Shane, even without moving to the driver's seat, you can certainly put a car into motion. And in that case, you actually had the defendant touching and using one of the three elements to move the car. I'm trying to get my mind around why it is that this is a case of physical control and Shane isn't.
I think the
other than her location, she obviously is sitting in the driver's seat, but she's not sitting in the driver's seat in a way that gives her access to put the car into gear.
Well, I think that, again, the fact that she is in the driver's seat is an important factor because a person has more ready access to the three elements to initiate the movement of the vehicle from the driver's seat than they would from the passenger seat. I think that is an important factor that distinguishes from Shane.
Are you suggesting that a person cannot put a car into motion from the passenger seat?
They could, and I think that's something that Shane acknowledges, because one of the other facts that Shane hypothesizes that could put the person in physical control is if they had touched the steering wheel or put the vehicle into gear. And so in a situation, if Shane had either moved to the driver's seat or put the vehicle in gear or touched the steering wheel, that might have been a fact that changed the overall situation. Whereas here, you know, appellant did voluntarily move from the passenger seat to the driver's seat. And as appellant acknowledged, she did so by getting out of the vehicle, moving around the vehicle, opening the driver's door, and getting into the vehicle. And as your honors acknowledged, there are other cases where individuals outside of the vehicle have been found to be in physical control. And I think to respond to your honor's statement about her calling her sister, yes, intent to operate is not a element of physical control. And moreover, this court's case in Broughton versus Commissioner of Public Safety, which is 2001 Westlaw 1665365, was a case where the officer came upon an individual in the driver's seat of a vehicle with the keys in their pocket. They told the officer that they were waiting for their sober ride to pick them up, and this court nevertheless found the individual in physical control because there was a presumption that an individual is in physical control if the individual is found in the vehicle and, without too much difficulty, could operate the vehicle and become a source of danger.
But Shane says, you know what, we have a different analysis when someone is a passenger. And I mean, that's where I keep getting stuck too, because Shane, you had somebody who had actually taken a step that is necessary to operate a vehicle, had depressed the accelerator. Here we have no action taken by Miss Liu to initiate any action or any movement of the vehicle. Seems to me this is closer to Shane than Starfield or the other cases where either someone is the only person who could be the driver or was found to be the driver.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with that, Your Honor, because as Shane acknowledged, that the person has to take some step to some action to relinquish their passenger status. And here appellant did that by moving to the driver's seat, which is a fact that Shane specifically acknowledged could put the person in physical control. And that put her in a position to provide the means to initiate the vehicle.
It could.
But again, in Shane, that's exactly what happened. You actually had, again, one of the three, the most likely instrument to move a car is the gas pedal. I mean, of the three components, you can injure someone without even using the steering wheel if you just put the car in gear and depress the gas pedal. So I'll tell you, it's a troubling case. I'm struck by the officer's decision to make the arrest in the first place, but here obviously we're beyond that.
As am I. Was there a criminal charge filed?
I don't.
There was. I'm seeing a nod. Yes. Okay. I too am surprised by the officer's decision here.
Well, as Your Honor acknowledged during the appellant's argument, whether the officer, in his discretion, should have done it is different than whether the elements of the offense were met for the.
You're right. You're right about that. A passenger, someone who wasn't driving to begin with, the officer knows there's no evidence that suggests she was driving to begin with. She gets out of the car and she sits in the car with her legs outside of the car. So, I mean, I understand in Shane where the question is, well, there was no movement to get into the driver's seat. I think the presumption there is get into the driver's seat so that you can move the car. Here, she gets into the driver's seat, but not in such a fashion that would put her in a position to operate the car or even put the car in gear. She couldn't even depress from her position. She couldn't even depress the accelerator as Shane did. And yet Shane was not in physical control of the car. I mean, not only did she not depress the gas accelerator, she couldn't without changing to some other position. If Shane is right, if the Supreme Court is right that we're concerned about the positioning of the individual and the movement and what that movement might suggest as to how the car might be a danger, I'm having a hard time seeing the car as a danger here.
Well, if we're concerned about the position of the individual, an individual in the driver's seat more readily has the means to initiate movement of the vehicle than somebody in the passenger seat. I think the Supreme Court and Shane
well,
said
not in
that,
her position, not where she was situated. The passenger in Shane was in a better position to access the vehicle's controls than someone sitting 90 degrees perpendicular to the car, with their legs outside the car. I mean, we know that, right? She can't reach the accelerator. She didn't try to reach the accelerator. She can't put the car into gear. Shane could have done all of those things and did one of those things from the passenger seat.
Well, that I don't agree with that, Your Honor, because the Supreme Court in Shane said that he would briefly reached over the passenger seat. He reached, leaned over the passenger seat and evidently touched the vehicle's gas pedal briefly. Whereas here, appellant was voluntarily moved over to the driver's seat. And yes, her feet were angled outside of the car, but she could very easily have swung her feet over and then touched the gas pedal and put the vehicle in gear because the keys were in the ignition and the vehicle was running. I think that
how is that distinguished from Shane? There was no, the Supreme Court didn't suggest that, well, he's in control because he could have easily touched the steering wheel. The court said he didn't touch the steering wheel. That was the significant thing, is what he didn't do. Why shouldn't we be concerned about what she didn't do? Touch the steering wheel, touch the gas, move into the driver's seat in a way that was suggested in Shane, which was move into an operator's position. She didn't do that.
I disagree, Your Honor. She did move into an operator's position because she moved to the driver's seat, which is where somebody would normally operate the vehicle.
In the way she was sitting? Is it possible to have operated the vehicle from the way she was sitting in the car?
She had the means to initiate the move, very easily initiate the movement of the vehicle and make the vehicle a source of danger. All she had to do was swing her feet over and put the vehicle in gear, and then she could have driven away.
Exactly. But the Supreme Court in Shane didn't say, well, all he had to do was to position himself differently and he could have moved the car. All he had to do was to touch the gear. The court said there was no evidence. There was no suggestion by the officers that he did either of those things.
Right. And one of those things was that he didn't move to the driver's seat. And that's something that I think distinguishes this from Shane, as I mentioned, because he said the Supreme Court said that there has or is about to take some action as an example of an action an individual could take to put them in physical control is to move to the driver's seat.
Does Shane talk about relinquishing passenger status? I know that that's a phrase I associate with this body of case law. Do any of the cases talk about what it means to relinquish passenger status?
I can't think of, I know there is a case that uses that term, but I can't think of the case off the top of my head. I think it's, talking about some action that the person takes to show that they are no longer a passenger, but have now become in physical control of the vehicle.
So technically, I mean, under Starfield, if she had gotten out of the vehicle, walked around, opened the door to the car, but not gotten in, would it be the state's position that, well, she relinquished her passenger status by getting out and walking to the driver's door, and under Starfield, she was in control because she could have gotten in and driven away?
It's the totality of the overall situation that's determinative, so it's hard for me to Speculate it's possible because there are
Mm-hmm.
cases that have found an individual to be in physical control when they're outside of the vehicle, when the vehicle is running. State versus Frisch is one of them where they believe the individual was actually
But are
a.
those cases ones in which the defendant was a known passenger?
In Frisch, the individual was not. And yes, there has to be some action taken by the passenger to show that they have relinquished that passenger status.
Well,
Again,
perhaps that's why intent does come into play in this area. I mean, we might say, okay, we're not going to look at intent when you're the only person there who operated the car or who's going to operate the car. But if we have a known passenger, perhaps we should look at intent.
no, I don't think so, Your Honor, because I don't think intent to operate ever comes into play. It's just whether the person has taken some action to put themselves in a position where they could initiate the movement of the vehicle.
True enough, in cases where we're not dealing with a known passenger. In Starfield, that's where that language about we're not going to look at intent because looking at drunken intent would not be a worthwhile exercise. But in that case, Starfield wasn't a known passenger to start, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I see your time is up. We'll now hear rebuttal arguments unless the panel has any additional questions for Mr. Marsalek. Oh, all right. Rebuttal?
Thank you. I'll be brief. I would point out that there's a countless number of rural postal carriers that would demonstrate that a vehicle can be driven from the passenger seat. I see it coming down my road frequently. I believe Shane was trying.
Oh, hold on.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure. Are you referring to? Oh, I see. You're not talking about the postal vehicles that actually have the steering wheel on the right side. You're talking. All right. Okay. I think I've seen what you. I know what
I'm
you're talking
referring
about.
to an old Buick that the now retired mailman used to drive. Anyway, Shane was trying to impose a reasonableness, and I may be going in some level into intent. I mean, the cut here is the officer must have reason to believe that the passenger has or is about to take some action that makes the motor vehicle a source of danger to themselves, others, or the property. Here, there was no reason to believe that. When the deputy walked up, he saw what was going on, and he arrested her simply because she was sitting there with her legs out. It should have been apparent to anyone that she did not intend to and was not doing anything or doing any action that would give the officer reason to believe that she was going to take some action that makes a motor vehicle a source of danger. There was no reasonable basis for that. That's why we're here on the appeal, Your Honor. That's all I have, unless you have any questions, and I thank you for your time.
You're
You're muted,
muted,
Judge
Judge
Larkin.
Larkin. I apologize. My toolbar keeps disappearing, so I can't see the mute sign. We thank you for your arguments and briefing. The matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days.